We present Billy Whitelaw in The Last Obit by Peter Tinniswood.
I've been computerized. I've been replaced. They've put all my files on computer. This is my last day here at the Morning Telegraph. They've allowed me to go out in style. So here it is. My last obit. Dame Nina Plunkett, pioneer aviator and society hostess. Born Dublin, 1906. Died, I've just discovered trainers. They're so comfy. I sleep in them at night at the foot of the bed. I take off all my clothes and I fold them up neatly and I lay them on the Lloyd Loom chair. Then I put on my nightie. And then I curl up in one of my trainers. The left one, or the right one, depending on choice. And in an instant I'm sleeping like a log. Dame Nina Plunkett, pioneer aviator and society hostess. Born Dublin, 1906, died. I always write my obits in longhand. I never learned to type. I resisted it, deliberately. I like words, you see. I think it's insulting to them to churn them out mechanically. They should be handcrafted. Words obsess me. Obsess. How lovely to write that word. Obsess. The sweep and swirl of the word. Its plumpness. Its slyness. Obsess. Obsess. Dame Nina Plunkett, pioneer aviator and society hostess. Born Dublin, 1906. Died. My mentor was the great obituarist, the late H.K. Jefferson, known to one and all as H.K. He was a loathsome man, H.K. I once saw him talking to a prostitute on a street corner. They went off, arm in arm. I followed them, in the rain. They've all been through this office, you know, the dead. Lord Baden Powell, George Lansbury, Edwina Mountbatten, Dixie Dean, Sir Edward Shackleton, they've all been in this office. And I've always made it a policy of mine to give them what I like to call the personal touch. Well, it's a very stressful time. If your life is death, you've no control. You're at the mercy of your obituarist. That's why I don't take advantage of my position. I try to be fair. Dame Nina Plunkett, pioneer aviator, society hostess. Born Dublin, 1906. Died. That window. It's too high to see out of unless you use a beer crate to stand on. H.K. could see out of it. He used to say, it's nice to see there's a bit of life going on outside. I loved my dad. What I remember of him, that is. He joined the Pals Regiment in the First World War. Got himself killed on the Somme. Mother said, your dad's dead. He's been killed. After the war was over, she married Wilfrid Shadwell Minchell, solicitor and amateur antiquarian. Born Stoke-on-Trent, March 14, 1893. Died February the 3rd, 1944, Shanklin, Isle of Wight. Fancy dying in Shanklin, Isle of Wight. They sent me to the grammar school. Oh, I did love the uniform. If only I could see out of that window. Dame Nina Plunkett, sculptress. Born Ashton-on-Mersey, 1906. Died, I saw Dad's grave. We went on an organised trip. I say we, meaning myself and my friend. We went over by coach and crossed Channel Ferry. I bought a bottle of pheasant's breasts in Aspic. I bought it in a shop and brought it back in a carrier bag. I didn't break it. I brought it back intact. Wilfred Shadwell Minchell used to fondle me when Mother was out of the house. I've been a member of the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds for 36 years. It's the names of the birds that attract me. I like the waders best of all. Such lovely names. Stilt and Sanderling, Knot and Plover, Redshank and Turnstone. Dame Nina Plunkett, ornithologist and chief scientific advisor to the Ministry of Agriculture, born Dublin 1906, died Cambridge 1998. In the sphere of ornithology, Nina Plunkett made her mark as one of the innovative field workers of her generation. Her study of the whimbrel was considered a landmark in the annals of... I followed them in the rain, HK and the prostitute. After a while, I lost them. So I followed someone else. That's how it all started. My hobby. Following people. Saturday's my favourite day for following people. On Saturday, I have a nice mixture of business, pleasure, indulgence. Last Saturday, I followed a lady. She had skinny hips and painted lips. She'd be about 57, I'd say. She'd lived a bit, you could see that, and I'd say she wasn't all that particular underneath. She had that look of safety pins and scuffed elastic. She had the look of a whiskey drinker, too. But her shoes were top-notch. Italian, I'd say. She came out of Boots Cash Chemist and hesitated. And that's when I knew. She was going to be my quarry for the day. It was 11:17 a.m. And since 10:39 a.m. I've been sitting in the window of the Costa Rica Coffee House, formerly known as Chatterton's Tea Rooms. I'd taken the precaution of paying the bill immediately so I could take action in an instant when a suitable subject appeared. So as soon as I saw her, there was no impediment to my leaving the table, going out into the street and taking up station a discreet distance behind her as she proceeded down Oxford Road in a purposeful manner, which indicated to me that she had a definite destination in mind and a specific time at which to arrive there. Imagine my surprise, therefore, when she suddenly stopped dead in her tracks and clutched at her throat. She made a croaking noise, and then her legs crumbled beneath her, and she collapsed to the pavement. I didn't move. I couldn't. It would have spoilt the convention. She arched her back, and her face convulsed. Then she began to twitch and cycle in the air with her legs. I carted her off by ambulance. She was quite still when I slammed the doors and switched on the lights and the siren. I had a tasty cheese omelette and chips for lunch with bread and butter. And then I returned home and watched a swimming gala on the television. I was entrusted with the task of writing HK's obituary. I made such an excellent job of it, they appointed me as his successor. I was the first woman in the annals of the Morning Telegraph to hold the post of chief obituarist. Such a pity Dad didn't live to see it. He'd have been so proud. He died on Somme. He was in the Pals Regiment. Only three of his pals came home from the war. They lost 876 men in one day, three quarters of them in the first 10 minutes. It makes you think. Dame Nina Plunkett, historian, born Dublin 1906, died Toulouse 1998. The somewhat confined academic world of feminist military history proved to be a rich and fertile grazing ground for Dame Nina Plunkett, whose detailed studies of the psychology of women nursing auxiliaries during the Sudan crisis of... I've got another hobby too. I write spoof obituaries. I know them all off by heart. Oh, yes. Here's one of my favourites. Bispham, Dame Valerie, received her DBE for services to the tea interval in county cricket, invented the quick-release potted meat sandwich and the disposable rock bun. Dame Valerie is survived by her colander. You wouldn't think I'd got it in me, would you? I sometimes wonder, too. I sometimes think there's another hand at work. I always take spiders out of the bath on a piece of toilet paper. But first of all, I make sure the windows are open. There's nothing worse in life than having a spider in a sheet of toilet paper in your hand and not being able to rustle up a spare hand to open the windows. It's a tip worth remembering, is that? Dame Nina Plunkett, born Blackrock, Dublin, 1906, died Omaha, Nebraska, 1998. Elsbeth Odile Natalie Plunkett, known universally as Nina, was an entomologist whose research into caddis flies revolutionized in... I once followed W.H. Auden. He was holding a carrier bag. Funny how carrier bags keep cropping up in my life. Anyway, W.H. Auden was carrying one, and it seemed too heavy for him. He kept pausing and propping it up on the pavement against his legs. Once it toppled over and shed some of its load. He bent down, looking rather harassed and not a little guilty, and replaced the shopping in his carrier bag. But he missed out one thing. A greengage. I often think of that greengage when it thunders and I'm lying naked in my bed, panting. They don't have hot metal anymore on newspapers. When Wilfred Shadwell Minchell fondled me, his breath smelt of blackcurrant cordial, and he moaned, and his teeth shattered, and he attempted to speak soft endearments. I loved it when they had hot metal on the newspaper. The heat, the noise, the smell, the compositors with hairy chests and tiny moleskin aprons with the deep pockets where they kept the slugs for letting out. There were real men in those days, real craftsmen, bibulous, raffish. Now they look like customers in a damp laundrette. That's why I've been computerised. They don't go a bundle on individuality these days. Waiting. Waiting with impatience. Writing. Writing in longhand. They've all passed through my hands. The great, the creme de la creme of the dead. Margaret Lockwood, Sir Jack Hobbs, Semprini, Homer, Frank Swift, my lover. I wrote my lover's obituary in longhand, carefully. Dame Nina Plunkett, consultant designer, born Blackrock, Dublin, 1906, died Salzburg, Austria, 1998. With her work for many of the world's leading airliners, designing the interiors of a series of prestigious jets, Nina Plunkett established herself as one of the most influential interior designers of her generation. I designed my lover's bathroom for him. I suggested teak for the woodwork. He concurred. That window. I do wish I could see out of it. This filing cabinet. They've locked it. I do wish I could see inside it. What's the use of having a filing cabinet if you can't unlock it and... This way, that way, up and down, in and out, to and fro, back and forth, hither and thither, neither here, neither there. Take me, leave me, kill me, spare me, love me, hate me. The sparrow dangling on the gutter, the clutter of geese on the marshes, harsh words, kind words, finding the peewits hollow in the meadow, the shadow of the hooper limping in from summer. Take me, leave me, kill me, spare me, love me, hate me. That door. I do wish I could unlock it. H.K. Jefferson, or H.K. as he was universally known to friend and foe alike, was packed up each working day of his life by his mother. He had a wife, but she was not allowed to pack up for him. That was his mother's task in life. Every day she packed him up with 4 cheese sandwiches, 2 scones, and fruit in season. No change, the same. Day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out. She had to arrange her holidays to coincide with those of H.K.'s. Even when she was poorly, he wouldn't let her off the hook. He'd drag her downstairs in her dressing gown, stand over her as she sliced and buttered the bread and took out the cheese from the meat safe and cut it in regulation slices. There was no escape for her, none whatsoever. She pleaded with him for release. But no, he wouldn't have it. It had to be his mother who packed him up. Or so the story goes. I've got another spoof for you. Here it is. Zog, Albania, ex-king of. It's a good one, isn't it? Zog, Albania. My lover once went to Albania. He said it was a very poor country. He said he thought the sculptor Eric Gill could have been very happy there. Gill, Arthur Eric Routon, sculptor, engraver, writer and typographer. Born Brighton, 1882, died 1940. One lazy afternoon in late summer, just before the outbreak of the Second World War, or was it the Malayan insurgency, H.K. sidled up to me and said in a whisper, "Would you like to go out with me tonight?" "Yes," I said, "where to?" "Somewhere special," he said. And it was somewhere special. After work, he took me to this cafe to have high tea. We had gammon, fried eggs, mushrooms, tomatoes, chips, hot toast and butter, scones, preserves, fancies, the whole works. Then he took me down this side street, which smelt of goats. He knocked on the door of a shop with pictures in its windows. Later, he told me it was a gallery. They let us in. There was a room full of pictures and sculptures and people smoking Turkish cigarettes and drinking wine from cardboard beakers. "This, my dear, is Eric Gill," he said. "Who is this?" I said. "Can you point him out to me?" He tutted with his tongue. "My dear, Eric Gill is not present in person. This is an exhibition of his work." "Oh," I said, "I see." We looked at the exhibition. Well, talk about nudity. Talk about pudenda. Talk about being explicit. There was this carving called Votes for Women. I can see it now. To this very day, I can see it vividly. There's this man, and he's naked, and he's stretched out on his back. And there's this woman, and she's naked too, and she's sitting on him. She's sitting between his legs, and her knees are hunched up to her breast, and she's clasping him tightly round the waist, and he's got his head tossed back, and it looks as though he's about to thrash out with his legs. "What on earth are they doing?" I said to myself.
"Do you like it?" said H.K.
"Yes, it's jolly good," I said.
Philip Edwin Gillis, born Frodsham, 1918. Died somewhere at sea, 1942. He was a compositor here on this newspaper, was Philip Edwin Gillis, in the days when they used hot metal. He was tall, with a slight stoop. He had thick, jet-black wavy hair. He had a nervous cough. He was my lover. His name's on the roll of honour downstairs in reception. No one reads it anymore. I know it off by heart. Aitken, Percival. Anderson, Thomas. Anderson, William. Bill Anderson. He was in the stereo department. Lovely man. Bergen, Richard. Catliffe, Ernest. Cheatham, Roland Morris. Blah, 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 blah. Gillis, Philip Edwin. He was my lover. Once, when he went on a holiday in Devon with the Cyclist Touring Club, I had a fling with Bill Anderson. It was only brief, but it was lovely while it lasted. Poor Bill. The nips got him. In a prison camp. He starved to death. The nips did it.
Oh, was it the Malayans? I've got to get this obit finished. I can't let them down. They're depending on it.
Daemlina Plunkett, concert cellist and meteorologist. Born Blackrock, Dublin, 1906. Died Winnipeg, 1998. As an interpreter of the works of Delius, Nina Plunkett has few equals. The purists might have taken exception to a vivacity of style, which sometimes bordered on the reckless, but there can be few who... I started here as a young girl. Timid and inexperienced in the ways of the world. "I shall take you in hand, my girl," said H.K. And he did.
He took me home for tea with his wife, an elderly mother. We went by elderly tram and had elderly jam on our elderly bread. Everything about that evening was elderly. He walked me back to the terminus.
Did you enjoy yourself? He said.
Yes, thank you, I said.
We must do it again, he said.
Then he paused and squeezed my hand and whispered,
without the others.
And we did. I think HK's finest achievement was his obit of King George V. It was a model of brevity. Mind you, a strong case could be made out for his treatment of the death of the first Viscount Leverhulme. He was a soap maker and philanthropist, was the first Viscount Leverhulme. I imagine his underpants were always spotless. He was born in Bolton. Nat Lofthouse was born in Bolton, too. Nat Lofthouse. The Lion of Vienna, they called him. How lovely to be called the Lion of Vienna.
But you can't join up, Philip. You can't, you can't.
I can, I must.
Why?
Because.
Because what?
Because, that's all. Because.
Because what, Philip? Tell me.
They allowed me to write his obit. They didn't put it in the paper. But at least they allowed me to write it.
When he was in command here, HK would brook no noise. We had to work in total silence. He said it was only fitting, as we were dealing with death and destruction and the corruption of flesh and the withering of love. When I took over, I allowed a certain relaxation in the regime. I introduced soft music. My assistant, Susan Loosemore, used to work herself up into a real lather over it. She'd be foaming at the mouth, her eyes rolling in their sockets, and her fingers clawing at the walls. She married an optician, did Susan Loosemore. I must get on with this obit, I really must.
Dame Nina Plunkett, trades unionist and deputy head naval intelligence, Home Fleet, 1938-1939, born Black Rock, Dublin, May the 20th, 1906, died
once upon a Gustav II, King of Sweden. He was known as the Lion of the North. He was buying a packet of tapers in the co-op. After making his purchase, he went into a print shop. I think he bought a gift token, but I can't be certain. When he came out, he looked first to the right, then to the left, then to the right again, and seeing that the road was clear, crossed over to the other side. Subsequently, I lost him in the crowd. He seemed a decent enough sort of chap. I can smell rabbits. The chief reporter brought me the news. He looked very grim, very grave. One of the lenses in his spectacles was frosted. I can't remember which one.
I'll not beat about the bush, he said.
He didn't have to. I knew what he was going to say. He was on a corvette, was my lover, Philip Edwin Gillis. Born Frodsham, 1918. Died somewhere at sea, 1942. I hope he didn't suffer when he died. He certainly suffered when he lived.
I really must get on with this obit. I must concentrate on the task in hand. But it's my last obit, and I want to go out with a flourish.
Dame Nina Plunkett, crime writer and former chairman of Selectors England women's cricket team. Born Blackrock, Dublin, May the 20th, 1906. Died,
I can see him now, Philip Edwin Gillis. Pinched with the cold he is. The ends of his fingers white as lard, despite his leather gauntlets. I can hear his voice. Nasally, weak, bordering on the tremulous. If he'd jumped into the sea when the frigate was torpedoed, no one would have heard his cries for help. And even if they had heard, they most certainly wouldn't have responded. I didn't.
This way, that way, put it here, put it there, do this, do that. Blue with dear, female nude standing, female nude seated.
We went for a drink after the exhibition of the works of Eric Gill, HK and myself. It was a sad little pub, forlorn. HK had half a pint of mild and I had a glass of port. He confided in me. He said his greatest ambition in life was to have a pied-à-terre where he could entertain lady friends. He said he could just visualise it.
There'd be oriental rugs and small items of furniture made from rosewood and tupelo. There'd be a coal fire in winter. He'd have a decanter full of the finest claret. There wouldn't be a bed, just a chaise longue. He bought himself another half pint of mild and he told me he could just visualise it. I'd be lying on the chaise longue. I'd be wearing a silk shift, nothing more. It would be wrinkled up round my waist, exposing my breasts and my secret parts, he said. He could just visualise it. And he sighed. And then he walked me to the tram. I've just thought. Zog. Albania. Ex-king of. That wasn't one of my spoofs. It's real. How strange I should make a mistake like that. I can smell Dad. He used to come into my bedroom at night when he thought I was asleep. I could smell the beer on his breath. And when he touched me softly on the lips, I could smell the nicotine on his forefinger. July the 1st, 1916. That's when Dad died on the Somme. Nearly 60,000 men fell on that day. Haig Douglas, 1st Earl Haig of Bemerside, 1861-1928, Scottish soldier and field marshal. Dad wrote to Mum from the trenches, just before he died. He said it was the morning after the bombardment of the German fortifications. He said there was mist in the hollows, lying in white rolls in the folds of the ground. He said suddenly the larks got up one by one, and he could hear the sky full of their song. He said one or two of them got into the trench and they were fluttering around, all bewildered and lost. They were in a panic. And one of them was perched on a dead body. It just quivered and panted. Dad picked it up carefully and laid it in the palm of his hand. After a few seconds, it died. Haig Douglas, 1st Earl of Bemerside, 1861-1928, Scottish soldier and field marshal. Chickenpox, measles, mumps, scarlet fever, I've had them all in my time. The best meal of all was when he came home late from work and Mother had put your supper in the oven between two enamel plates. The mashed potatoes burnt the roof of your mouth and you could stand your boots on the gravy. Dad's brother, my Uncle Fred, played the castanets. We had a dog called Rex. The night before he died, he came into the back parlour and shook hands with each of us in turn. Dame Nina Plunkett lived in the attic. They don't have the printer's ways goose anymore. Oh, I did love the printer's ways goose. One year we went to the seaside. It rained incessantly, but it didn't seem to matter. It rained incessantly the day Mother died. She died in a nursing home on the North Wales coast. I went to visit her. The lady who ran the home rang me specially. Here, at the Morning Telegraph. When I got to the home, a little old lady in gumboots and a plastic pixie hood took hold of me by the hand and said, "Not long. It'll not be long, love. Your man will soon be in heaven." No one had told me. No one had prepared me for it. I didn't realise she was so close to death. The little old lady said to me, "When your man's called to glory, do you think I could have our reading glasses?" It was raining incessantly. Very Welsh. Mother looked quite cheerful. She smiled at the little old lady and pointed at me and said, "Who's this then?" And the little old lady said, "It's your daughter." And Mother said, "Fancy." Chasing rabbits on the dunes, over the water, on the ferry, perch rock, rock ferry, fairy cakes for tea, fresh caught flounders, Lamport and Holt, Mother die at 7:13 in the evening. Still raining. Incessantly. They've all passed through here, you know. Yes, they've all passed through. The great and glorious dead. John the Fearless, Duke of Burgundy, 1371-1419. Nansen, Mussolini, Mantovani. Rebecca West, Octavia, Benny Goodman, Eleanor Glynn, William the Silent. You name them. They've been here, cluttering up the place, leaving their cigarette ends on the floor, yawning, scratching, belching, farting. Vasco da Gama was the worst of the lot.
He was a devil for making rude noises. I was glad to see the back of him. I followed a lady yesterday. It was my day off. I spotted her in Woolworths. She was buying toffees. She was a tiny lady, very, very small, petite. In her early 60s, I'd say, and vivacious. I had a job to keep up with her. I was grateful for the break when she stopped off for a buttered tea cake and a beaker of hot milk at the co-op cafeteria. I had a cheese roll. 85p. Outrageous. I followed her to the bus station. She got on a number 27 double-decker. I sat behind her. She took out a compact and applied powder to her cheeks. Then she took out a woman's magazine from her shopping bag and read all the way to the terminus. She got out, so did I. I didn't recognise where we were. I could smell the sea, but I couldn't see it. She walked very, very quickly, did my lady. There was something purposeful about her gait and her manner and her comportment. She walked as though she meant it. She turned into a leafy street. The houses were substantial. They had extensive grounds. She turned into one and walked rapidly up the long gravel path. She took out her key from her handbag and let herself in through the front door. Gulls yapped. I thought I saw a fulmar. Somewhere in the distance, I heard the pipe and trill and fluting of waders. I waited by the front gate till it got dark. I could smell the lilacs in their grove. Bats fluttered, gnats spiraled, a fox coughed. When the church bell began to toll, I stepped forward and walked towards the house. My feet crunched on the gravel. Before I could ring the bell, the front door opened and the lady said, "Come in, my dear. We've been expecting you." She changed her clothes. She was wearing a black silk shift. Nothing more. Those breasts of hers. Her hips, her thighs, her secret parts. I was mesmerized. "The door," she said with a soft smile. "Come in through the door." I did. They were all waiting for me. They were all gathered there in the hall. All of them. Dad, Mother, Philip Edwin Gillis, H.K. Jefferson, Wilfred Shadwell Minchell, Dame Valerie Bispham, ex-King Zog, Aitken, Percival, Anderson Thomas, Anderson William, Bill Anderson. Fancy. As handsome as ever. Fancy. We had ever such a nice party. They'd hired a professional conjurer and outside caterers. We danced. Wilfred Shadwell Minchell ran his hands up and down my back and pressed his thighs into me, and I could feel his thing throbbing.
Aitken Percival was hopeless at the slow foxtrot.
But it's getting darker. I wish I could see outside. I had a long chat with my lover. We went outside into the garden. Someone had built a pond there. How thoughtful of them. Philip Edwin Gillis took hold of my hand and smiled. It was a shy smile. "How did you die?" I said to him. "How did it happen?" "Do you really want to know?" he said. "Are you really interested?" "Yes," I said. "Right then," he said. "I'll tell you." He did, in all its gory detail. I wish I could unlock that filing cabinet. I'd love to see inside it. That door. I wish I could open it. "Do you own this house?" I said to the lady in the black silk shift. "Oh, no," she said. "Quite the contrary." The drink flowed. There was no shortage of anything you wanted. Dad's breath smelled of beer and his forefinger stank of nicotine. He was too reticent to come across and speak to me, but his smile spoke volumes. Mother pointed to me and said to H.K., "Who's that?" And H.K. said, "It's your daughter." "Fancy," said Mother, "fancy." For the first time ever, Bill Anderson called me by my Christian name. "Millicent," he said. "Oh, Millicent, Millicent." It was a lovely party. This man with iron grey hair came over to me. He smiled at me, warmly. It warmed me through and through. Your life is too fast, he said. Take it slower, much slower. That's all. Your life is too fast. Take it slower, much slower. I've never seen him in my life before. They sent me home by hired car. The driver said his name was Peter, and he didn't like being called Pete. He had a mobile telephone, which he didn't know how to work properly. He said on the whole he'd had a happy life, and had once been on the books of Notts County.
Millicent. Oh, Millicent, Millicent.
This way, that way, put it here, put it there.
I have a confession to make. We didn't go straight home. We stopped by a strand. I can see it now, vividly, every nook and cranny of it. I see the strand, broad and tropical with painted seabirds screeching. It curves in a crescent. The sand is still, not blown by the wind. But then, it begins to stir. It contorts and writhes. And suddenly, it bursts asunder, and scratching and scratching and clawing to its surface come thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of baby turtles. Baby turtles. Imagine. Black, gulping, dull of eye. No bigger than the nail of my thumb. There is a pause. For a moment they're baffled. Then they realize they've been born. They smell the sea. They turn to the sea and they begin to slither across the strand. There is a pause. Then the sky clouds over. Vultures. They land on the strand fastidiously. And very fastidiously, they take the turtles in their beaks, and very fastidiously, they rip off their heads. Some of the turtles escape. They scuttle down towards the sea and the surf, and out of the bush which fringes the strand come furry creatures with long pointed snouts and erect tails, whooping and gamboling. They toss the turtles from hand to hand. They play with them. They sport. They cavort. Fine, crack me lads. And when the sport is over, they stuff them into their joyless mouths. And they crush them. And they crunch them. Some of the turtles escape. Nearer and nearer they get to the sea. Beautiful, powerful. And then crabs with periscope eyes rise from their lairs in the sand and bar their way. And slowly they rip the turtles to shreds. Some of them escape. Just a few. They feel the slinking, shifting, surf-soaked skirts of the sea beneath their feet. Beautiful. Powerful. And lizards with frills to their throats trot delicately after them. They open their mouths and gulp them down. Some of the turtles escape. A handful. The smell of the sea fills their nostrils. They feel it spit upon their lips. Powerful it is. Beautiful. And then, very slowly out of the sea, lumber the mother turtles. Their mothers. They are bound for the strand to lay their eggs. They stare fixedly at the bush, and very slowly, with infinite, patient, timeless disregard,
They trample the baby turtles as they make their way ashore to lay their eggs. Beautiful. Powerful. What crack!
I'm ready to write the obit now.
Dame Nina Plunkett was not born in Black Rock, Dublin, though she wished most fervently that she had been. She was not born Elspeth Odile Natalie, known to friend and foe alike as Nina. She was born Millicent Doris Clayton, and her birthplace was Liverpool. Her father was killed in 1916 during the First Battle of the Somme. Her mother died in a nursing home on the North Wales coast during her last battle for love. During her long life, she achieved distinction and fame as pioneer aviator, society hostess, concert cellist, mountaineer, racing driver, crime writer, advisor to the Ministry of Agriculture, and chairman of Selectors England women's cricket team. Her colleagues, friends, and relations were unaware of these achievements, and thus she was denied the admiration and respect due to a person of her many and varied talents. Her one great regret in life was that she was never given simple tasks to perform. Cleaning out a garden shed, taking a neighbour's dog for a walk, buying a shrub in the garden centre, packing up a husband for work, wearing a black silk shift and exposing her breasts and secret parts, sitting naked, knees drawn up to chin, hair hanging free, bumping, 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 dying without fuss. Dame Nina is not survived by her obituarist.
I'll pop the obit in here, for safekeeping. Well, you never know. Just cottoned on. I know where that lady took me. You know, the party with the conjurer and the outside caterers. It was Black Rock. Black Rock, Dublin. May the 20th, 1906. I wish I could see out of that window. It would be lovely to see what's in store for me.
The Last Obit starred Billy Whitelaw. The play was written by Peter Tinniswood and directed by Enid Williams.